Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Debbie Guy-Giesch of the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR, Revenue Market Radio. And as everyone knows by now, we meet just about every Thursday to talk to a real revenue marketer and learn tips and tricks on how they've made that transition from traditional marketing to real revenue marketing. And I'm so excited to have our guest today. I've been trying to get him on for about a year. It's Jeff Raminger, and Jeff has the most fascinating topic. We call it a real-time lead nurturing, and if content is key for you, you're absolutely positively want to listen to this interview today with Jeff. But before I start the interview process with him, let me give you a short introduction. Jeff is currently the Senior Vice President of Products and Search Strategy at TechTarget, and he's doing some phenomenal things for the business there. And prior to that, he worked for an Atlanta-based company, Knowledge Storm, where he was the EVP of Products, Technology, and Marketing. And he's also spent part of his career at IBM, working in parts like IBM Global Services and also the e-business services sector. So, again, we're so pleased to have Jeff on the show today. So, Jeff, welcome.
Thanks very much, Debbie. It's good to be here.
And I think we're going to have a good time today. I always tell all of our people that come onto the show, you know, I want to keep this pretty casual. But the most important thing is to talk about something that you're kind of excited about. And I know that when we did the pre-interview, this notion of real-time lead nurturing certainly caught my attention. So before we jump into that topic, Jeff, why don't you tell us a little bit more about, you know, what you do at TechTarget and kind of what's unique about your business model and how you're using marketing automation.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. So TechTarget is a fairly newly public company. We went public in 2007. We focus pretty exclusively on the IT technology kind of marketplace as a publisher. So we have over 100 websites that are very, very topic specific. So our focus is the development of really high quality editorial content that we think IT professionals and prosumers are interested in. And we arrange that content on these sites that are very targeted. So sites about things like storage or server virtualization or data centers. And we have a set of sites about prosumer topics as well, so notebook reviews, digital camera reviews, desktop reviews, things like that. And basically our approach to the market is we do a combination of demand generation offerings and advertising offerings for lots and lots of different technology vendors. And so my responsibilities at TechTarget are really on the online product side, and so I have responsibility for the product strategy and the go-to-market and product marketing and things like that. And then my side job, if you want to think of it that way, is I also have responsibility for search, which in our case is really focusing on generating traffic to the websites and making sure that we're doing a good job of getting all the high-quality content that we have out in front of the audience that we think is interested in that content. And that's
absolutely
really the mechanism we use to bring, you know, users to the sites, which ultimately is how we do our demand generating.
Yeah, absolutely. And so as a publisher, number one, you have a very interesting business case for how you use your marketing automation system, which you guys are Marketo users. So you use it for yourself in generating your own leads, but you also use it in conjunction with lead generation programs to your clients. So maybe you can kind of clarify the two differences for our listeners.
Sure. So I'll start with what we do for our clients, because I think that's the most critical aspect of how we're taking advantage of the platform. So, you know, one of the classical problems that I think a lot of technology marketers have is, you know, their ability with small teams of people and not necessarily huge budgets to get a tremendous amount of work done. And as you know, there's a tremendous amount of pressure for a return on the investment. And in demand generation in general, online, most marketers start with very early stage content assets. So things like white papers and early stage webcasts tend to be very popular with the audience. And so you get prospects, or what some people would call leads, that are being developed as a result of people accessing that content. And the classic demand generation challenge is, how do you take those very early stage prospects and do something with them so that one of two things doesn't happen, right? You don't want them to be dropped on the floor and not passed appropriately to sales. And then the second thing is, you obviously don't want sales to look at them and say, well, these aren't qualified leads or prospects, and therefore I'm not going to follow up on them. So what we found in the market for TechTarget's clients was that there was a gap that existed where some of our clients really wanted the ability to have a publisher like TechTarget help them with the nurturing of their leads. And we come at that from a place where, candidly, it's a very data-driven exercise for us. So, we know our audience very, very well. We are very cognizant of their activity on our sites. And so what we've been able to do for clients on the marketing automation side is not only take advantage of enabling automation for the client, but take advantage of the data that we can use as part of that process. So we've integrated Marketo into our lead systems so that we can pass not only the typical kind of demographic and firmographic data across the Marketo, but we can also pre-seed, if you will, with some data that relates to that user and the activity they've had, so that it gives us kind of a running start at nurturing that particular lead.
And I think that's just absolutely fascinating. So basically what you've done from a perspective of how you do this for your clients is that you now can give them a more valuable lead, a lead that's later in the cycle, versus it meets the criteria, but are they really, really interested?
Well, and the fundamental premise of this is something that I think it's almost a little humorous when you think about it. But for most marketers, when you do demand generation with a publisher like a TechTarget, we like to joke that the world begins and ends with that first lead drop. So in other words, if John Smith comes and looks at your white paper, if you're the marketer, you're going to say, well, this is the first thing I know about John Smith. They've downloaded my white paper, and so now I can start to try to nurture them and follow up. But in truth, there's a vapor trail of activity that existed with John Smith before they got to your content. And we know, we've done a lot of research on our audience and on how IT professionals use content in the research process. And one of the things that we know is there's a direct correlation between the propensity for activity that a user has and whether or not that user is likely to have an active project that they're doing research for. So in essence, what we're trying to do with our automation offering is expose some of that vapor trail of activity that occurred before that initial lead drop, because it puts the lead in much better context and gives you a way to start to nurture them more intelligently than if you just started the nurture path based on that one piece of interaction that you have with that user.
Love, love, love that description, Jeff. It just makes it so incredibly clear. So how long have you had this offering to your clients? How long have you guys actually been using Marketo for this?
We're just coming up on 2 years of having used an automated solution for part of this. So we had actually, as publishers do and as product people do, we had developed some in-house solutions many moons ago that were what I would call basic remessaging solutions. So we've been, for quite some time, using the idea that if someone took an action, that there was probably another logical action that you would want them to take next. And we've had some basic capabilities in that regard for probably 5 or 6 years. But several years ago, we started to really look at this and say that what we were doing was, didn't have the level of sophistication that we felt that it deserved. And so rather than build that internally, we started to look at platforms and did a pilot back in August of 2009. And then in January of 2010, we actually did the pilot with another automation vendor, but in January of 2010, we made the decision to use Marketo's platform for the kind of hardcore go-to-market around this for our products, and have been a very happy Marketo user since then. And it's actually, we've had quite a few clients take advantage of it, and it's been a very interesting business offering for us, and we've learned a lot in the process, which has been kind of fun.
So let me ask you this. When you clearly, I mean, you guys do so many things, so smart and so ahead of the market. Even today's topic is going to be ahead of the market. Can't wait to get to that. But before we do, when you think about, you know, clearly you guys were using some kind of in-house tools beforehand because you knew this vapor trail was very important. Now you have a whole new level of sophistication with Marketo. How would you describe to somebody the difference that is made in your business?
Well, that's a great question. So, you know, the short history of demand generation from my perspective, and I've been doing this now, I've been in the demand gen business since 2000, so I guess that's 11 years. That makes me feel older. But
I think
the fundamental challenge is we've gone from a world where, you know, you had to convince people that online was an appropriate place to do demand generation to a world where you had people who said, okay, I want to do it, and it was kind of all about quantity and not so much about quality initially, where people were saying, well, how many leads can you get me? And then over time, and I think this has been exacerbated by the pressure on the ROI for programs, is there's a tremendous amount of focus on quality in the last, you know, probably certainly in the last 2 to 3 years, that's changed a lot. And when I say quality, what I mean really is an ability to do a better job of harvesting the raw leads or the raw demand gen that you're doing. So, you know, we've been able to produce, you know, many people in the industry have been able to produce demand or capture demand gen for years and years. But as you know, a lot of that gets dumped on the floor for a variety of reasons. So I think that the automation platform has been a key aspect of us being able to continue to improve, you know, the quality of the deliverable for our clients, and with the focus being that you want the least amount of waste in that process. And, you know, we tend as marketers to think only about our customer, but, you know, my job on the product side at TechTarget is I need to think about the user as well. So imagine being an IT professional and you really have a sincere interest in someone's product. And if you get dumped on the floor by that person's marketing or sales team, you know, that's not good, right? Because you're trying to solve a business problem. So we think this accrues benefits, you know, at a level for the users of our sites as much as it does to the clients of the sites where the demand is coming through.
Excellent. And I just, again, I think it's such a, I think, again, what you guys are doing is just so, really taking advantage of all the really smart tools that are in the market right now. And clearly, as you take a look at a TechTarget model, content is absolutely king for you guys. So let's kind of turn our conversation to what you and I had talked about in the pre-interview. And just to let all of our listeners know, whenever I set up an interview, I never have a topic in mind. I did that season one, and I just didn't like it. What I'd rather do is meet someone who's really interesting, someone that I know is doing really, really cool things, and invite them on the show and have them talk about what it is that they really have the most interest in. So when Jeff and I began to talk, he started talking about content and kind of the issue that they had with content, especially as they work with their clients. And he came up with a term, I'm going to go back to it right here, real-time nurturing. So why don't we, Jeff, transition into this conversation around content, and why don't you share with us, you know, why content is important at TechTarget and this new idea called engagement units that you guys are adding to your content?
I'd be happy to do that. So I'll start with a kind of a paradigm shift discussion and say that, you know, from my perspective, we've gone through with the web a couple of fairly major paradigm shifts. And, you know, one of those was way, way back in 95, 96 when we first started working on the web. And, you know, the first big e-commerce offering was obviously from Amazon. And what was interesting about that to me was that Amazon ultimately became the training ground for most users in terms of what an e-commerce experience was supposed to be. And so then you got, you know, back then I was in the website design and build business, and you know, if I had a nickel for every client who said, make my e-commerce site like Amazon, I'd probably be retired.
Yeah, that's right.
And so the next big, so that was a big paradigm shift for people, was they realized, okay, I can transact something on the web, and this is what I want that experience to be like on the consumer side. And then the next major paradigm shift for me was came in the early 2000 era when Google came onto the scene, and their search, their capabilities in search and the performance of their search was so different than what it was in the market at the, at that point in time, that I think it had a transformative effect on the way that people access content. And so it, at the end of the day, what TechTarget does and what we focus on is we focus on really high-quality content, editorial content, about topics that we know that IT professionals and prosumers are worried about. And then what we do is we figure that's a very good magnet for attracting the right kind of audience that we think that the advertisers in the technology space are going to be interested in. And the challenge is that if you think of marketing automation in the traditional sense, you know, we tend to see that as a cause and effect, where if the action that precipitates nurturing is that someone downloads a piece of content, the marketer then is taking it upon themselves to say, okay, I'm going to create a custom prescription that says if this person does this, then the next thing I should offer them is this, right? So you build these interesting kind of custom streams of nurturing. And what that misses, I think, candidly, is the whole idea that with the paradigm shift to where the user can access content kind of anytime, anywhere, and particularly now when you think about mobile devices and tablets, and, you know, we feel very compelled to give the user the opportunity to create their own nurture stream. And so the idea that that a user should wait for the marketer to go back and say, well, now that you've done this, go do this, I think it's a presumptive on our part as marketers to think that that's the only way to solve that problem. So what that led us to was this concept that we call real-time nurturing. And before I get to the punchline of that, the other big problem that we saw in the market, beyond wanting to give the user a lot more control, was that most marketers, you know, content is hard, right? Everybody I talk to that does content will agree that it's just a hard thing to do. And we had, you know, we have the opportunity, some would say that we're, you know, we have the embarrassment of riches to be able to look at and work with content from, you know, 1,000 top technology companies. And so as you look at that content, one of the things that comes pretty clear is that as marketers, we struggle with the idea of the what I'll call the natural nurture chain. So when we have a great white paper, and we'll have some great white papers, you get to the end of the white paper, and it literally is the end. There's not a call to action. There's not a website that I can go to further my look, you know, my interest. There's not a contact in there. There's not a phone number. And frankly, it's you know, we're abandoning the user, which is the worst possible thing we could do. And so as we talk to marketers about that, a lot of our larger clients even would tell us, you know, I'm frustrated by that, but I, as the marketer, don't own and control all the content. I can't go in and make those changes. I would have to have somebody else do that. So all of those things combined, this focus on the idea of giving the user, empowering the user to nurture themselves in real time, and then the idea that we needed to create an adjunct to the content that was being developed by the marketer or provisioned by the marketer, led us to this idea that we refer to as demand engage. And these demand engage units are basically let you take a PDF document, and we're supplementing that PDF document in a way that creates a persistent experience kind of next to the PDF document that gives the user the opportunity to take any number of additional actions that they might want to take to move themselves or nurture themselves in real time and, you know, more deeply into the buy cycle. And to give you some examples of how we can use that, you know, when you have somebody who's reading a very conceptual white paper, you know, you might have other white papers in that campaign that are important that you think that that user would be interested in. You might have webcasts or podcasts or videos that are kind of the next logical step that you want them to take. So you can offer them those pieces of content. We actually have done this technology in a way that if you want to put video in the document, we can actually have video stream as they're looking at the PDF document, so you don't have to take them somewhere else in order for them to have that experience. And then I think one of the most interesting aspects of it is that it gives the marketer the ability to define and offer an explicit next step. So I'll give you a good example that one of the pilots we did was with a company who their goal in all of their nurturing is to get the user to the point where the user wants to request a trial download of their software. And so we can build into this demand engage unit the ability for that user, as they're consuming that content, whether it's a white paper or in this case, the client had a number of case studies and data sheets that we enabled with demand engage, that we give them the opportunity right there to say, I'm ready. I want to download. I want a trial download. You know, somebody should reach out to me and help me with that. And then
so
similarly,
I think if anybody, if I could add right here, if anybody is listening to this interview, like I did the first time when Jeff was sharing this idea, and actually this project that they've done, you've got to have chills kind of going up and down your spine right now. It's kind of like the you've hit the mother load of everything related to content. But I want to go back to, because again, the whole idea of being able to empower the user to nurture themselves. And you kind of began talking about a project that you guys had done. But give me, take a piece of content that you guys have piloted and give our listeners a very concrete example of what that might look like, because we're not online and, you know, we're not sharing slides or anything like that.
Sure. So a couple of fundamental premises in this is that it is an experience that real-time nurturing does need to take place online. So unlike the PDF document, it's not something that a user is going to be able to effectively do if they're offline. But the more we've researched the use case and the activities of our users, the more comfortable we've gotten with the idea that very, very few of our users are really consuming the content offline. They tend to be connected all the time. Right, and I think that's even being accelerated through things like tablets and mobile devices that just we're always connected. And so, if you can picture in your mind's eye, if you took one of your white papers and put it up on the screen on your web browser, and then to the left of it put up a unit, this demand engage unit, which we used a particular IAB ad dimension because it was kind of a standard, so it's 300 pixels wide and 600 pixels high. And in that unit, we've got different tabs that the user can click on. So there might be a tab about white papers. There might be a tab about webcast. There typically in all of them is a tab that says next steps. So if you have your PDF document and you don't have a good call to action, you know, we press our clients on the use of these to be very explicit with, well, what's the next thing you want this person to do? And so it really is this, and what happens is that all of the normal functions you'd have with the PDF, being able to scroll through it, being able to zoom in and zoom out, being able to download it, being able to print it, you can still do all those things, right? And in fact, if you're reading it and you're scrolling through it, as you're doing that, this demand engage unit stays persistent on the left side, the left-hand side of your screen. And what I shared with you yesterday, which I think is the punchline, so to speak, is that what we found in our initial use of this with a couple of fairly large clients of ours is we're seeing between 45 and 60% of the people who access that white paper or that data sheet are going on to do something else in that unit and ask for additional content or ask to be contacted or ask for a download or a trial. So the interaction rate is just stunningly good. In fact, that candidly is much higher than we even predicted it would be. So we've been very, very pleased. And I honestly think, Debbie, that we're at the tip of the iceberg on this, that there's so many things we want to try that we just haven't gotten to yet.
That is just absolutely, truly amazing. And, you know, and we are living online these days. I mean, people, they're constantly connected, whether it's on a BlackBerry, a smartphone, on their computer, on their tablet, on their whatever, right? And so that ability and the way we consume content makes sense. A lot of it is online. But, again, I can just imagine, and actually you were good enough to send me some examples of it, so I did get to take a look at it, but just the richness of that is simply amazing. And you're right. I mean, if marketers who are listening to this interview take away nothing else, it would be to go back to all your white papers and at least make it a call to action everywhere, right? And make it very, very, very easy for them to do that. But again, with this kind of technology, what an engaging and rich experience. And you're right, it kind of lets the user, it kind of lets that client, that prospect, let them dictate how fast or how slow they want to go. And if they want to move quickly ahead, then you're giving them a way to make that connection. I think that's just incredibly hot. And to your point, Jeff, I think it's just the absolute tip of the iceberg. So how long have you guys been using this technology, and is it something that you guys developed in-house?
So we actually started, we conceived the idea. It was actually something I started working on back in kind of late December of last year, and we started our first pilots in the end of January. So it took us a little bit of time to put the technology together. We had actually been working on a couple of the components for a while and knitted it together, and we've had the pilots running. Now the pilots have been running, I guess, a little over 4 months, and so we work with a couple of our largest clients, which meant that the pilots got beat on pretty hard. So there was a lot of traffic that we were able to take advantage of. So we got pretty comfortable with what the performance of the units would be like and what the interaction rates would be like. And it is technology that we built in house. We're using a couple of platforms that are industry based, but the way that we put it together is somewhat unique to TechTarget. And you know, Deb, one of the things that I think is a really important point for your listeners is that, you know, when we first started to talk about this, we had some really interesting debates in TechTarget about, you know, is this a threat to, you know, the marketing automation driven solutions that we offer to clients. And what I've said all along, and what I think have convinced the people at TechTarget and our clients on so far, is it's absolutely not a threat, or it's not meant to displace the idea that a marketer is going to want to build custom nurturing or custom nurturing streams. This, you should look at this as a complement to that. So effectively what we're doing is saying we trust that the user is interested enough that in real time they're going, you know, we know that between 45 and 60% of them are going to want to do something else, right? And those additional pieces of consumption of content for that particular advertiser or client, that's nothing but positive, right? But it doesn't mean that you wouldn't want to overtly go back and through a mechanism like Marketo be emailing them relevant content or newsletters or things that you think will keep them engaged. So we see this very much as a two-headed strategy where you
can
take advantage of both.
It's just like when you build a nurture program, if this happens, then that happens. It's just another branch of that, really. And at some point, if the user wants to take control of how they're interacting with you, this gives them the ability to do that. And Jeff, I just want to also clarify that within Marketo, you can track the behaviors when they're in the demand engage unit.
Yes. Yeah, so in fact, what we're doing, so we're capturing, so this is a very, very interesting and important point. So any of the activities that happen are activities that we're capturing that data, and then that data can inform the Marketo stream as well. So in other words, if you have a, you know, in our case, what ends up happening between our lead system and Marketo, since we've built this custom, you know, experience as a publisher, anytime the user takes and accesses additional registration protected assets in the demand engage unit, they're dropping additional leads to what we consider additional leads on our lead system backend. All of those are pushed across to Marketo and can influence the Marketo nurturing stream. So there's really a very interesting kind of interaction between the demand engage unit and what we're doing on the nurture stream overall. And in fact, we're doing what I consider a reasonably good job of that today, but we have some tricks up our sleeve in the next couple of months with that data that's going to make that even more powerful, where we're going to be able to capture and push across a significantly larger amount of data than we even are today. So
I think that is absolutely fascinating. So have you seen any other systems in the market that kind of do something sort of like this?
Not at all, and it's interesting to me because this is, you know, I want to say it's an age-old problem that we've kind of been, you know, we've certainly been thinking about it for a while, and I haven't seen anything really like this. And, you know, we've seen a few people that have tried to do things where they've embedded content into a white paper. So they might embed a video as an example. But there are a couple of challenges with that that you have to be careful about. Is one, we find it that as a publisher, you know, when we talk to a client about modifying their PDF document, that makes clients typically nervous. And
right.
So this approach is an adjunct as opposed to a modification of the PDF, which I think makes the conversation easier. And then we also, from a performance standpoint, we've played with, you know, we had, like many people, we've played with the idea of creating rich media experiences in the PDF, and we just haven't found that to be as compelling for the user as what we're doing here with the demand engage units. And then the other thing that I haven't mentioned to you is that the other thing you can do is it's very easy for us to go back, and as the campaign matures, if we decide we want to change assets in the demand engage unit, if we need to tweak the call to actions, you know, those are things that we can do very quickly for the client and make it very straightforward and simple so that it has some, you know, it certainly has some longevity and some flexibility so that as a marketer thinks about the investment they're making, it's an investment that they can, you know, that they can amortize across some number of campaigns that they do on a particular topic.
Well, I think it's absolutely brilliant, and I think you guys have a product that you could actually sell there, Jeff, because, I mean, you're right. I have seen programs and systems where you can embed things in documents, but you're right, especially with larger companies that have lots and lots of content, you know, it's just going back and having to modify all of that content. And, again, as a publisher, you're working with other people's content and having to go back and modify that, just too hard. Plus, it sounds like with the engagement units, the demand generation engagement units, you just have so much more flexibility, as you were saying. You can go in at the last minute and you can change a call to action or you can change the assets that are available there. So let me ask you this, because you told me you run two pilots and two big customers, and you guys really, you know, beat it pretty hard. But did you actually get feedback from the users around what that user experience was like for them?
We have. So we definitely talked to some users in the process of this, both in the pilots, and then we also talked to the users. We talked to a number of users as we were designing this because we were curious what their reaction would be. And, you know, overwhelmingly, I think people have been very, very positive about it. There are a few kind of clever things that we came up with as a result of some of the feedback that we got from the clients that, you know, had us focus on, or I'm sorry, from the users, which caused us to focus on different elements. So one of those I'll tell you, which I think is particularly clever, is, you know, if you have a multi-tabbed unit, which is what most of them will be, I think will have multiple offers that you want to put in front of the client or the user. You know, one of the problems with tab-oriented interfaces of any kind on the web is that you're always wondering whether people are going to notice the tabs and click on the tabs. And so what we've done in this case is the platform we're using enables us to automatically go from tab to tab. So as the user is looking at the PDF, if they're reading the PDF and scrolling through it, the unit is actually going to change itself on a timed basis, and we can control that time so that if they haven't done anything after 8 seconds, as an example, we might flip to the next tab to show them other content that's available. So it's this persistence that we think adds a lot of value. And the one thing we also haven't talked about is, you know, it's not limited to sort of PDF-oriented content being added into the unit. So while it's easy to link to white papers and webcasts and things like that, I mentioned we can put video in. The other thing you can build in, which we think is critical, are social streams. So if you wanted to have your Twitter feed for your product or your company, you know, as an example, you can integrate a Twitter feed. If you wanted somebody to see a blog roll of your, you know, or see your blog on a particular topic related to that product that you're showcasing, you can do the social piece of it. So,
and I also see, and again, I apologize to all of our listeners, we're not a visual a group here, but I actually have the example that Jeff sent over to me, and I see that you can share, you can go Twitter, Facebook, you can go LinkedIn, And again, it's persistent on the left. So I'm taking a look at a white paper over here. It's, you know, six ways to do blah, 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 you know, the typical kind of white paper that all of us as marketers produce. And then on the left hand, I'm looking at, I could launch a video. I could take a look at additional white papers. There's webcasts. There's next steps, which I particularly love just how simple next steps are. I think that one thing right there, if you had nothing else but that, how cool is that? I think that's absolutely brilliant. And so, but I also think that the social element of this, now, did you guys, besides sharing this via social, did you guys do anything else regarding social in your pilots, Jeff?
Well, so we didn't have as much social. The sharing components were in the pilots, but we weren't as aggressive in that particular set of pilots of doing what I call social stream integration. And it wasn't for lack of interest. It just didn't turn out that these two particular clients were real interested in that for the short run. But we've been using a similar piece of technology in another area where we're doing a lot of social stream integration. So we have already gotten, I think, a very strong, you know, base of experience on what works well and what doesn't work well. And so we're going to be doing the next generation of these that we'll see out in the market here in the next 30 or 45 days. The projects we have coming in from clients now, I know several of them have a pretty aggressive integration of social streams. So it'll be very interesting to see, you know, what results that produces. And, you know, marketers now have so many metrics that they're interested in, and, you know, creating Twitter followers and creating, you know, Facebook followers for some clients is important. Having people, you know, subscribe to their blog is important. So it really gives you the ability to think of all the attributes of content that you possess, whether it's your content, whether it's an editorial piece of content, whether it's social content or user-generated. You know, how do you take advantage of all those things in this kind of an environment? So I think we've built a platform that'll do it. Now we need more and more opportunities to see it in practice.
Yeah, well, there's going to be no shortage of opportunities to see it in practice, I can tell you that. So let's do something here, because a lot of our listeners, of course, would be highly, highly interested in having this kind of tool and to be able to better leverage content the way that you guys have done at TechTarget. But it's proprietary to TechTarget. And right now, not something that you guys are actually out selling to, you know, other marketers. But you have a gigantic background in marketing automation, using Marketo, and content. So as you think about all our listeners out there who are always struggling with content, what's some advice that you can give them for how they might better leverage content?
So it's a great question, and I'll say it, to me it's an easy answer, and that the obvious thing that I see missed just constantly is, and it's frankly, you need to figure this out really to effectively take advantage of something like Demand Engage with TechTarget, is, you know, what is the stream of content that you would walk your, if you had the ability magically to walk the user or the prospect from one piece of content to the next, to the next, to the next, as you move them through the buy cycle, I think it's critical for marketers to figure out what that optimal marketing path or that optimal nurture path is, and then think hard about how do I create opportunities to link the content items so that at the end of this white paper, if the next thing I want them to do is to, you know, watch this webcast because I'm going to move them from the awareness phase to more of a consideration phase, then be obvious about that. And at the end of your white paper, you should say, if you're interested in understanding more about our solutions, you should do these things, right? So few people do that overtly. And let's face it, Deb, you and I know it's hard, right? You have to really think about this in order to build an intelligent nurture stream. But if you don't do that, here's the risk, right? The risk is that you can do a fabulous job of educating a prospect about how this particular technology can solve a business problem. And if you drop them at the end of that white paper, you're encouraging them to go back to the web and start searching all over again to say, well, what's the next piece of content that I'm going to consume? And for a marketer, that's the unforgivable sin, right? They've got to think about, I got you to read my piece of content. What's the next logical thing I want you to do? And you know, for our clients and people who are interested in information technology, you know, leads. You know, we think between Demand Engage and the demand generation offerings and the custom nurturing things that we're doing, you know, we certainly can help those kinds of people do it. And to your point about it being proprietary, it is. I mean, it's clearly something we're going to leverage aggressively with our clients. But it's still, even if you didn't have the Demand Engage unit, just that basics of thinking about how do you link content together, I think is critical.
I think that makes so much sense. And I think quite often marketers, they get overwhelmed with content. And to your point, if you just think about the buy cycle, how a client or prospect moves through that and just, you know, line up that content like that. And then, again, if you have clients that are doing more offline reading, you know, still make it easy for them to go back to a URL, whether they can click on something in the document or whether they, you know, they have to, you know, go put it in. But you're right. It's just the simple things of asking for the next step, suggesting the next step, the Amazon model. If you like this, then you'll like this, right?
Exactly.
And I think it's those simple things. So stream of content. What about the length of content? I get lots of questions, Jeff, about how long the content should be.
You know, that's a great question, and again, it's dependent on two things in our experience. One is the type of content we're talking about, and also the purpose of the content. So if we took white papers as an example, you know, in our world, we advise clients to, in no case do you really ever want to exceed, say, 12 or 15 pages for a white paper. And again, depending on what it is that white paper is supposed to do, you know, you can get away with it being a little bit longer if the person really feels like you're heavy duty in teach mode. So if it's something where they really feel like they're learning about a concept or a particular approach to solving a problem, you have some more flexibility. When you look at assets like video as an example, again, it's very dependent on what it is you're doing. So if you're presenting a concept, people tend to have more, they'll be more forgiving as to the length of the video. You might be able to get away with 15 minutes as an example. If, on the other hand, you're demoing some key features of your product in a video and you're trying to expose them to how your product works, you probably want to stay in the 5-minute or less range and break it into pieces because, again, we have this, you know, we have an interrupt-driven society now, and it's very difficult even for people to spend, you know, a concentrated 15 minutes or half hour with a piece of content. So I think with video in particular, what we've tried to do is break it into these digestible chunks of information with the idea being that if you can present that to them in you know, 2 to 3 minutes per segment, that it becomes a very consumable thing. And what we found, interestingly enough, is if you have those shorter segments, and if let's say you have 4 or 5 of them that make up the total message you're trying to send, if you break it into those pieces, we actually find that we get better view-through on that video overall, where people will say, oh, I'm going to watch this piece, and then they're compelled and they watch the next piece. It's a little tougher when they hit start and they see that the video is 15 minutes long, and you know they're trying to imagine, well, what could there be in this that's worth my 15 minutes of time?
I love that idea. So as you're talking about video, I've heard a lot of people say that for marketers and for content, this is the year for video. What do you think about that?
You know, I think it's very true on a couple of levels. I mean, one is that we have to stop thinking about video sort of uniquely in terms of it being, you know, this standalone thing that we worry about creating, and we want to think about it as much in terms of what it can add to other platforms of content or existing approaches to content. So as an example, you know, we've gone on the webcast side from a world where, you know, people do PowerPoints with an audio voiceover to environments where video can a lot of times add a tremendous amount to a webcast, particularly if you're talking about product functions and features and, you know, you do screencast kind of videos that include that. The other thing that I think is true of video is that it becomes a very, very good, it's very good, particularly in the consideration phase, at helping people map the business objectives and requirements into functional objectives and requirements. So, the classic chasm or the flip point, I call it, from awareness stage to consideration stage is where mentally the user is saying, well, I had these business objectives and problems, and now I figured out at least that I can solve them with technology. And so at the point that they come to that conclusion, it's logically, I think, where the consideration phase starts. And we find video to be very useful in terms of helping the person then start to see, you know, functionality and see what the application might look like or what the solution might look like. And it's also, you know, let's face it, we're a TV-driven society still to a degree. So I think video as a medium is particularly well-liked. And now, given the bandwidth and capabilities we have, you know, available to us, it's a little bit more of an accessible approach for marketers. And, you know, I'll give you an aside on this that I think is kind of interesting. We did a study at TechTarget a couple of years back with Google and on search and the IT professional. And one of the things we were trying to understand was that, you know, whether video was really compelling. And this is several years ago. And it was absolutely a high growth area. All the respondents to the study were very positive about it. And one of the things we found in talking to marketers was that marketers were probably too worried about production values at that time. And, you know, if you think about the fidelity expectation that people have when they look at something like YouTube, you know, it helps the marketer because now marketers, I think, can do some things that are not studio quality but that are well done and still get their message across.
That's right.
And that can be a very effective tool. So you don't have to go and hire, you know, somebody to shoot movie quality video in order for that to be a successful element of your marketing campaign.
Absolutely. So one of the things that you didn't overtly say, but you said at the beginning of the interview, and it's a thread throughout this entire conversation around content, and that's how well TechTarget understands your customer. You can't have a content plan, you can't have a content strategy if you don't understand who your customer is and therefore also understand that buy cycle. But you guys clearly understand and know your customer well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. We're very blessed, I think, in the sense that, you know, as a publisher, the natural opportunity is that you get to work with a lot, if you're good at what you do, which, you know, we're happy that clients like us, and, you know, we get to do lots of campaigns. And so the benefit that gives us is you get to see people, you know, you see a lot of success and you see a lot of failure, and you can learn, you know, which things work best for particular targets or particular elements of the audience. And, you know, it's clear that there, you know, there's a very high variance in quality out there in terms of the not only the content that's being produced, but also the way that it's being presented and connected, you know, item to item for clients and or for users. And I'll tell you that this is stuff that, you know, regardless of how big your budget is, to me, that's why I said before it's an unforgivable sin, is it doesn't cost you a lot of money to create a nurture stream and logically figure out how your content connects together. And if you can't figure it out, how in the world is the user ever going to figure it out?
And if you can't figure it out, you need to go find another job, because that's kind of ridiculous, right? So we've got a few minutes left in the program, and so one of the questions I always like to end, because we have so many incredible and wonderful and expert guests on the show, is let's say you meet someone at an event. And maybe they're brand new to marketing automation. Now, let's just take it, just a typical B2B marketer. What kind of advice would you give them, Jeff?
You know, I'll tell you the thing that I think this is one of those things. I'll give you an analogy, which, you know, you're obviously more schooled in marketing automation than I am. But, you know, I like to think of it kind of the way that I think of Microsoft Office products, right, is that, you know, you can. It's very easy for a marketer to get caught up in the bells and whistles side of the discussion and say, well, this platform has these 48 things and that platform has these 62 things. I think at the end of the day, especially for somebody getting in this, kind of getting their feet wet, is what I would stress is the importance of, you know, the basics and being able to define, you know, smart nurturing streams, figure out what you think logically, how you want to connect content for the client. And then the other thing is that I think there's a tremendous amount of, I won't call it experimentation, but I think there's a tremendous amount of learning involved that for your audience in particular, you have to be very mindful of what's working and what's not working, and you have to test and you have to tune things. It is certainly anything but a set it and forget it sort of an environment. I think it begs for kind of day-to-day, week-to-week administration, not in the sense of, you know, somebody checking reports, right, but somebody that's doing a lot of thinking about, hey, how's this working for me? What's the next logical step of things that I should try? And so, you know, again, the analogy would be if you start pretty straightforward or simple, you can layer on the levels of complexity as you get more comfortable with the platform and you get more comfortable with the result that it's producing. And then the other thing I would say, and this is, you know, I've been in a variety of different jobs in my career, and I sold for a long time. I've had the fortune to be on the marketing side. I've gotten to do product things. Is, you know, at the end of the day, we always have to remember why we're doing this stuff, right? So as a marketer, you're doing this stuff because you're trying to feed a pipeline for your sales team and have your sales team be successful and drive revenue for the company. So to your point of calling this Revenue Marketers Radio, I mean, it's about the revenue. I mean, that's at the end point. You know, for a publisher like me, it's about the user as well, right? So I'm only as good as I can be if I can get people to come back and use TechTarget's websites and use our sites for research and looking at vendor content. So we spend a lot of time worrying about that half of the discussion as well.
I love the way you summed it up, and again, I think that for the marketer who's just beginning to embrace marketing automation, you know, you're right, don't get caught up in the bells and whistles. Stage one, you want to focus on those basics and, to your point, smart nurturing and connecting content to the buy cycle, which 90% of the time they never do. They don't even have a buy cycle. And then I also really liked your point, Jeff, of how you're going. We always tell marketers when they begin an engagement to use marketing automation, I look them in the eye and I say, what you don't know right now is absolutely stunning. I'll come back and talk to you 3 months because that learning curve is just truly so significant. And it's not a set it and forget it. I had a conversation this morning with not a client, but someone who I had met at one of the Revenue Rockstar Roadshows with Marketo, who needs to kind of take his game to the next level because his senior management thought that you buy marketing automation and you set it and forget it. And so right now, clearly, they're not getting what they need to get from it. But also to keep it simple and then to layer on. And then you're right, at the end of the day, why are you doing this? Don't get caught up in activity. Focus on results instead. And remember that your job is to feed a pipeline. So I think those are all great points. Well, Jeff, you have been completely delightful today. I always enjoy talking to you. I feel like you know more about the space. I've probably forgotten more about the space than most people I know, including myself. So it just was a delight to talk to you today. So thank you so much.
Oh, well, thanks a lot, Debbie. It was a lot of fun, and it's, you know, I'm excited, as you can tell, about some of this new stuff that we're doing, and would love to talk to any of your, you know, if any of your audience wants to have a conversation about what we're up to or what we've learned, I'd be happy to talk to them, and, you know, you're welcome.
How would they get in touch with you, Jeff?
I was just going to say the easiest way would be email, and it's, my email address is jramminger. So jraminger@techtarget.com.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Everyone, have a great week.